Welcome to our episode of Revenue Chat. Today we have Clive P. Riddlesbrood on the use of storytelling, lessons to help your branding, and great public speaking tips. He will regale you with entertaining tricks and lessons to help your company branding, the use of storytelling to build your business, and give you some excellent public speaking tips, all from a master at captivating audience attention. Get that and more next on Revenue Chat. Hi, everyone. This is Tony D'Urso with Revenue Chat. With us, we have Clive P. Riddlesbrood, founder and owner of the Riddlesbrood Touring Theater Company, who says, "Laugh justifies the means." Clive grew up in the entertainment industry working with his father at a dinner theater in South Jersey and started his own theater company in 2000. His big dream was to build a large theater company, and he did it.
The Riddlesbrood Touring Theater Company
is one of the most successful and vibrant theater companies in the New York, New Jersey area, performing more than 150 murder mysteries and dinner theater shows per year at multiple locations. He also produced three Broadway-style shows at the historic Strand Theater in Lakewood, New Jersey, and operates a year-long School of the Arts program for children and teens. Clive has performed in over 5,000 theater shows in his lifetime. He also just released his first book titled Riddlesbrood and the Greatest Brochure in the World. All right, get ready for Clive to share entertaining tricks and lessons to help your company branding, the use of storytelling to build your business, and give you great public speaking tips, all from a master at captivating audience attention. Hello, Clive. How are you?
Hello there, sir. Thank you very much for having me on today.
Oh, well, the pleasure is all mine. I am very grateful to have you on the show. Thank you very much, Clive.
Well, thank you very much. So it sounds like you guys want to talk a little bit about storytelling and how it can be used to really help your business, whatever that may be, whether you're running a charity or a hoagie store or a theater in my case. I can really tell you how storytelling can make a huge impact. Customers see you, how your community sees you, and everybody really sees how you fit into the fabric of the community. So I'm excited to talk a little bit more about that too.
Awesome. And just before we get into that, which is probably my first question, just earlier I mentioned a little bit about you. Perhaps you would like to fill us in a little more on your roots and how you became an expert in this field, Clive. How did it all start for you?
Well, in my case, it was a little bit easier perhaps than for others because I grew up in the industry. My mother was an entertainer. She sang in top 40 bands all around New Jersey. And my father was also involved in theater. He also was in a band. So I really grew up immersed in the entertainment industry. And as I got older, you know, I got roped into being in shows and different, you know, kids shows I would be in. So I really grew up with it. And once I became a teenager, my father actually owned a theater down in Cape May, New Jersey, called Elaine's Dinner Theater. And so I grew up with that, and I was in a lot of shows. I did tech, you know, I was pretty much around it all the time. So I really got saturated with it in my bones, and I really had a love of theater from an early age. And then actually I went to college. I actually went in the Army for several years. And when I got out, I had intended to go to college to get my degree and become an archaeologist, believe it or not. But, you know, my passion for being involved in the arts kind of took over, you know, and I just winded up wanting to stay in the industry. And I did. And in 2000, I decided to start my own company, the Riddlesbrood Touring Theater Company. And since then, it's been a very rocky road, as any entrepreneur can attest to. And we had multiple times when we almost went out of business, several times where things were pretty dark and terrible. But somehow, some way, we always managed to stay ahead of it and come back from the abyss. And now we're actually, I'm so grateful and fortunate to be one of the biggest players right here in this area. I think just the other day we did a list at the end of the year, and as a company we've performed more than 1,700 shows. So that's a
wow.
large number, and the amount of driving we calculated just to get to the gigs and back, we could have circled the globe more than three times. So, you know, I'm very proud of that accomplishment and feel that, you know, really feel that I can now share a little bit of the things that allowed me to get there with my younger self when I was in my 20s, really trying desperately to get something going.
That is very cool. Awesome. Congratulations on those 1,700 shows just with your new company. That is fantastic. And performing in over 5,000 shows in your life, that just blows me away. That is awesome.
Probably more time on stage than in real life.
There you go. So, well, that brings me to the first question then, Clyde. So please, would you kindly tell us how can we use storytelling to help the small business and in our lives and so forth?
Sure. Well, the first thing I would say is for any of your listeners that are not familiar with the entertainment industry, it's really cutthroat. It's really tough. To make matters worse, the numbers don't always work very well. It's almost impossible to make money doing entertainment for most things, which is why you see so many bands start off and, you know, they'll play for free at the local bar and they're, you know, with a lot of excitement and a full heart, they'll go out there and try to make it. And, you know, most of them don't. Same thing with theater, same thing with, you know, dance companies. You know, people that want to be artists really have it pretty tough. You know, the market doesn't respect as much as we would like. So when you're a business in that field, you know, you can't just be good. You can't just be better than your competitor. You have to be so damn good. You have to really be powerful, and your presence has to shine, way outshine anything else. So that's where I think other people that may be starting a business, whatever it may be, can learn a little something, because they probably in that other sector may not be in such a competitive, difficult industry. So even if they don't use all of the ideas that I've used over the years, maybe just using a few of them could really make them stand out in their field.
I see. Very interesting. Well, now you have a lot of lessons of acting that you've learned, and you've talked about helping businesses and entrepreneurs. Well, how can they use that to actually propel their success?
Well, like for instance, I mean, this day and age, I'm sure a lot of people that have a small business and they're trying to grow it or trying to start a new business, they know that everything boils down to, or they should know that everything boils down to exposure. And a lot of people focus at first on their product, which is fine. And then they start focusing on things like running their business and the systems involved in their business and business. And what they forget is all of that stuff only matters if you have business coming in. So the first thing you have to really realize and focus on is your marketing, your promotions. How are you getting your name out there? How are you lead generating? How are you getting the business to call? And that is where storytelling can help, because, you know, you may be familiar with people doing AdWords on Google, people trying to get their SEO, their SERPs up high, trying to get their company to rank highly on the search engines. That's really important. And a lot of times it's not always easy to do that, especially if you don't have deep pockets. Storytelling in many ways is kind of like guerrilla marketing. You should think about it more like a delivery system for information as opposed to just a gimmick. It really is another way to transmit information. So just like a website is, you know, people look at your website and they're going to get some basic information. You know, they're going to see a little bit about the company, what you guys do, what the prices are, and maybe hopefully decide they want to use your service or product. Well, storytelling is similar to that in that you're still delivering the message to the person who's listening, except that it's done in a much more entertaining way and in a much more passive way. So where somebody doing a PowerPoint presentation and giving you a lecture and, you know, with their little pointer pointing to the different bullet points, that is delivering information, but it's in a much more active way that sometimes turns listeners off. It can be boring. It's not something people really want to do that. They don't want to sit there and listen to that. And so the information can be lost. People might not be getting the message. Storytelling is a way to overcome that. And you can use storytelling in any number of ways. And what we have done is create a mythical mascot for our company. And we went ahead and we spent time and energy to create a very interesting backstory. Now, it allows us to tell these different stories, and the kernel of the story, the plot of the story, is still a persuasion to try to get the average person listening to either like us on Facebook, give us their email address, come to one of our shows, or even better, book one of our shows for a private party they may be holding. So we get them into listening about the character, the mythical world he comes from, the different adventures he has, but it always ends in the same place, and it's trying to funnel people into lead generation. So, you know, it's not as nefarious as it sounds, because you're offering entertainment. You're entertaining people. They don't have to buy what you're selling, but they may very well get very attached to your brand and your company, because, you know, you're not just yelling at them to buy something. You know, you're not whispering at them. You're getting up there and performing in front of them. And if they like you, then maybe they'll buy a ticket, or maybe they'll, sign up for your class, or maybe they'll buy one of the things that you're selling, maybe buy your book. So that's really one of the big important overarching themes with storytelling.
Wow. The wheels are going on in my noggin on this. It's very interesting. I really, truly like what you said, Clyde, about it is like a vessel. You have a website, you have an email, you have text on your phone. Well, a story is also another vessel of communication. And I never looked at it that way. I like that. That's very insightful.
Well, not only is it insightful, but it's also – it's actually so fundamental that people forget it's fundamental. And what I mean by that is, you know, for instance, let's just say you go to a supermarket and you want to buy, I don't know, a can of soup. And you go there, you go to the store, you see the different brands on the shelf. They're all there. Now, you can't taste the soup. You can't even look in the can to see it. You just have to go by the picture on the can, what shelf it's on, what does the colors on the package look like, and maybe if you're particularly savvy, you look at the ingredients and stuff like that, and then the price. But that's all you have. You can't taste it. You can't eat it. So the question is people are making decisions based on completely intemporal things, subjective things. So if you're a business out there and your competitors are out there, you often think of that as being your shelf, and you think of your product being on the shelf too. But here's the rub. You might not even be on the shelf. You might not even get there. So even though your soup could be the greatest soup in the world, it could be the cheapest soup in the world, it could be the most, you know, fresh ingredients and all that stuff, it's pretty much irrelevant, because the fact of the matter is you're not even on the shelf. So you have to get sure that you're on the shelf. And the way to do that is to concentrate most of your efforts on creating a presence and an identity and a brand that really is compelling. It's an attractive force where people say, "Ooh, look at that. What's that about? That's interesting. I'm going to spend another 2 seconds looking at it. Ooh, the next 2 seconds I spent is even more interesting and cool. I'm going to spend maybe a minute and read something. You know, maybe I'll actually take the time to look at their website." If you got that far, you're really close to the sale. And that is the thing. Don't be one of the cans that just is like, well, which one looks better with the numbers? Which one has better font on their packaging? Which one has a more colorful picture? It has to be more than that. You have to really create that shiny object that people are going to be distracted by and then compelled to come closer. So I don't know if that kind of gives you a better idea of the spirit of what I'm trying to describe.
It's very interesting. Can you please tell me more about the branding? For example, an example. All right, I have that soup, and you say it's not just the pictures or the font or the color. Perhaps it's a commercial I saw, or maybe not. What can be done to, and I like what you said earlier, it distracts and gets the attention. What could be done to distract me, get my attention, and make me interact with that can of soup?
Well, I would say the first thing that you want to do is, you know, you first want to compete like everybody else does. You don't want to, I don't want to say you want to use storytelling instead of traditional things. In other words, you still have to have a good product. It still has to be priced right. And, you still have to use the basic, elements of graphic design. You can't exchange this for other things. But what a lot of business owners probably have found out is that even if you do everything right, you're still not going to win. There's still that missing component. Unless you just have money to throw at it, you're still not going to get there even if you do everything right. So with storytelling and branding in general, allows you to do is think outside the box. How can you get people caught up in the story of who you are? So you use soup as an analogy. What if, for instance, you watch Harry Potter, right? And everybody loves that. Harry Potter, the magic, the whole world. Well, what if the person who wrote Harry Potter, they owned that soup? And they just happened to make it that the way to get to Hogwarts was you had to eat this magic. And you hear the story, you know, these kids, they found this in their grandmother's cupboard. They ate this magic soup, and it was awesome. And then it transported them into another world, and they had all these adventures, right? Well, it really has nothing to do with the soup. The soup is kind of secondary. But it's such a cool story, such an interesting idea that people will retell that story. People will tell their friend about the story, and then they'll say, and you can actually buy the soup. Yeah, you go to the store, you can buy it. It's really the same thing as all this Star Wars thing you see now. You know, they make a movie, and then they merchandise. Well, who says you have to go that direction? You might be able to go the other direction, create the product that you want to be the merchandise of a hitherto yet uninvented story, you see? So that way you can get more people to talk about it. It's unique. All the other soups are just soup. You got magic soup. So think, if you're out there somewhere and you're, you know, a DJ, or you're trying to sell something, you know, what is a story that you can build around your product that could be an interesting thing that your product just happens to be somewhat central to? And that way you can actually, in a way, merchandise your own product by creating the entertainment that surrounds it.
Very interesting. Very interesting. I like that on the soup in Hogwarts. That's very cool. And yes, that would sell a lot. Reminds me a little bit of The Christmas Story. I don't know who all's listened to and watched it, but it's an amazing, fun child movie about Christmas. And in there, your talk, Clyde, on branding reminded me of the Ovaltine side story in that movie, which was just awesome. The kid had to have that Ovaltine. It was life revolved around it, the special codes, and this whole thing was all done to drink that Ovaltine. It was very cool, and it became very adventurous in a way.
So, well, the only thing cool with that, the only thing bad about that example is that it was a tease. It was all just to lead up to getting a commercial. So I don't know if that would be the best example. I would say the Red Ryder BB gun would be better because the movie's great and it's talking about a Red Ryder BB gun. Well, you know, it's not a big gimmick at the very end to slap your audience in the face and say, hey, all this was a big commercial. No. At the end of the day, when you're done seeing the movie, and then you walk into the store, and then you see the Red Ryder BB gun that you can buy, you're going to love it. Because you're going to say, that's the thing from that great story.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think of that in other movies, too, in terms of merchandising. And a little bit separate, perhaps different in the branding, is thought of Cracker Jacks, where the whole purpose to get the product was to get the toy or the prize.
Right.
That was the whole reason, was to go beyond. It's kind of a little different. There wasn't really a story, but it still branded it uniquely in that vein or fashion.
You're right. I mean, you know, most of the things that I'm discussing should be looked at from the point of view of a young, or not necessarily young, but just an entrepreneur, somebody starting off with their own business that doesn't have a lot of money in the treasury, you know, that they can do traditional advertising. And that's why I mentioned that storytelling is, in a way, a bit of a guerrilla marketing tactic, because it allows you to puff yourself up, make yourself seem bigger than you are, without costing a lot of money. And that's why, I mean, cause let's face it, if you're a big company and you have lots of money, you don't need to do all these things. You just buy a commercial, you know. But when you're little, you know, you need to try anything you can to try to get people attracted to your product.
Very true, very true. Very interesting. Very insightful. Now, you have some interesting anecdotes, I believe, and stories about entertainment life that perhaps could bridge over into the business world. Could you please share some with us?
Sure, certainly. Well, you know, I think the first thing that comes to mind is when you're an actor, especially when you're just learning out, one of the biggest things that you realize you have to master are the basic things for public speaking, like, you know, speaking with authority in your voice, presence, you know, volume, speaking in an articulate way without a lot of, you know, breaks and ums and ahs in your voice, and, you know, just saying things clearly and succinctly. And then you learn more things like modulating your intonation and, you know, saying things in a lyrical way with some alliterations that, you know, are have a little bit more of a musical tempo and a little bit more of a rhythm to them. People, even if they don't understand the words you're saying, they will pick up on that, and it'll be looked at them as being competent. When you're a small business person, you're probably going to be finding yourself in lots of situations where you're trying to compel or persuade other people come along with you. Now, whether you're trying to find a new venture partner, or you're at a, you know, Rotary meeting or a chamber of commerce, and you're there to try to get everybody to maybe give you a break or add you to their website or whatever it may be that you want, you're probably going to be in a position to have to convince these people with speaking. So if you're young and new to the game and you really want to start off good and you don't have lots of money, you really want to maybe master the arts of some acting 101, because that will allow you to really get out there. And besides just persuading groups like chambers of commerce and stuff like that, even when you're doing sales and even when you're on the phone, you know, if you're on the phone, people can detect if you care or not. They can tell that you don't care. I mean, you know, just call up a small business person, you're going to get a very enthusiastic, excited person on the other end of that phone. You know, you call the DMV, chances are you're going to get somebody who really don't care whether you live or die, right? And you can detect that immediately. You know, the human mind can do that. So you want to be one of those people that people enjoy speaking with. So if you're one of those people that has a hard time speaking in public, or, you know, you're not really comfortable that way, I would say this is one of those times when I need to get in your face and say you need to better yourself there, because it is such a powerful tool. You can't just say to yourself, well, it's just not me. You know, to do that would be to give up too much power, too many benefits. So just like you wouldn't say, well, you know, I don't like working on the internet, it's just not me, you wouldn't say that, because we all know that that would be death to your business to not be concerned with the internet. Same thing is with public speaking. You need to become as good as you can there, because when you're sitting there in that meeting with that big client, you can't afford to slip up. And that's where you need to be able to use all those tools. So, you know, I often tell people, take an improv course, go in and be in a couple community theater shows. You'll learn so much by just being in a show or two that you'll walk away being far more confident than you were before. And it's a powerful way to strengthen that part of you. And you'll notice when you walk into a room with a client, you know, and they're maybe in a superior position to you. You know, they're a big company, you're just a little guy. And having your toe in the world of acting is a good start.
Points well taken, Clyde. Well taken. I like that. It makes perfect sense. Yes, in terms of sales business, you have to know public speaking. You have to understand some of the basics of commanding that attention. And I have not taken any acting classes myself, though I probably have done a few acting. I was in a company once, and I don't know how it happened, but every week or so I wound up doing a skit, and I would write a skit and I would put it together, and I had a pretty good sized group of people under me, and we would do various skits just for, because we were pushing a particular theme around in the company. My department was dealing with the retention. We had to keep people, we had to keep customers in with the company. And this was a time when long distance rates were dropping like meteors. They were dropping fast and our rates were a little high. And so I had to convince the whole company that everything they did and any interface they did with our public would help retain them. And I had the what's called the attrition rate, which is the amount of how well you keep your people. It was under 2%. In other words, we lost under 2% of our customer base, which was amazing.
Right.
And I did every week, I did little shows and I would just write them. And I just always, it was a based on a play I saw or a movie or a classic. And as poor as it was, I never took any acting classes. It got the message across to the company, because all I wanted them to do was to go that extra mile when they spoke to the customer on the phone. It worked. So I can attest to the fact that, yes, you do need some acting classes, and that really helps get the point across. Probably a little different from what you were saying, but I wanted to just comment on that because that's very true.
Well, it's not, you know, what I think you're hitting on a little bit in there is the power of persuasion, too, because you've probably heard this a lot. People make decisions based on emotion, you know, and then they legitimize that decision later on with analytical facts. You know, that's been said a lot, but it really is true. So and probably everybody out there that's listening knows this. I mean, there's probably a mechanic that you use for your car that, you know, might not be the cheapest, but he's a guy that you really like, you know, you've known him, you know, you walk over there, you know, you talk to him, you know, it's just easy. You like them. It's effort to try to go out and try to find the best price. So that in a way is a derivative from your ability to be likable. And if you're likable, you know, you probably are likable because people, when they hear you speak, when they see you, when they talk to you, you know, they like you. They feel like you care. They feel like you have a command of your skill set. And that's important. I mean, if you call Comcast or something like that, and I hope I'm not going to get in trouble with Comcast, but any big company, you know, they don't care. You know, you call them with a problem, they don't care. Because they're big and powerful, and they could care less whether or not you leave or not. And everybody knows that. You call like a little business, you're going to get great customer service usually, you know, because every sale is so dear to them. You know, Comcast, they don't care. They just look at the statistics. Well, as a small business, you can't afford to be like that. You have to be a person that when they talk to you, if you're really good, it's like an addiction. They don't want to get off the phone with you. They want to keep talking to you. That's great.
You got that right. Absolutely. And speaking of public speaking tips, I believe you have a list of them. Can you please tell us? You've brought up a few points, but can you kind of get more into it and give us some pointers on that, please?
Well, public speaking points, I mean, some of them are psychological. Some are something that's more physical that would require some rehearsal, some training to master. But let's deal with the psychological ones first. The first one is just basic confidence. If you're scared, you know how they always say the shark can smell the blood in the water. If there's a lot of fear bound up in you and you're walking into a big meeting, no matter what you say and how you say it, they're going to know that you're scared. And that's not really going to help you at all. So the first thing you really need to focus on is getting rid of that fear by having and replacing it with confidence. And the easiest way to do that is to put yourself in situations where over and over again, you're going to be in front of people talking to people. So if that's why I sometimes recommend people to do a community theater show, because you're going to surround yourself with people that are extremely extroverted. You're surrounding yourself with people that are not inhibited. You know, they'll tell you anything. They're not worried about offending you. You know, they say whatever's on their mind. You know, so you're going to be surrounded by that. And then you're going to get in front of 100 people or 500 people and say your lines, and you're going to do the show a few times. And that doesn't even count rehearsals. So you do a show or two, that fear will kind of magically disappear a little bit. That's the first thing. Become a little bit more confident in yourself. The next thing is command your knowledge. You know, it's really important to, if you're going to go into a meeting or if you're going into a big client and you're trying to get them to give you their business for whatever reason, you know, you really have to know what you're talking about. So don't come prepared. Come, you know, don't just let your body come to the meeting. Bring your brain. You know, you really got to be on there. Don't come thinking that you know it. You know, really take the time to go over, well, this is what I'm going to talk about here. This is the benefits. There's the beneficiary. You know, make sure you have all that in your head. So, or she asks you a question that's not on your script. You're not going to be, whoa, I'm thrown off now. And then all you're doing is reacting instead of attacking. So you really need to be in control of your knowledge. You know, why is it that you're there? What is it that's so great about your company? And if you're excited and enthusiastic about your product or service, they're going to pick up on that. They're going to feel that energy coming off you, and they're going to be like, wow, this, you know, even if, you know, I don't really know exactly what he's talking about, he's excited about it, so it makes me excited about it. So that's probably the second thing I would say is master your knowledge. Then the next things are more training-oriented. You know, you really want to see if you can have a good volume. If you talk very quietly and you're very shy and, oh, you know, I've never done this before, that's going to be perceived as weakness. And you can't stand up and say, oh, it's not fair, you know, that it's perceived as weakness. It doesn't matter. It is perceived as weakness, so you have to try to have good volume. And if you don't have it, then maybe really think about finding someone who does that can represent you in those circumstances, because volume is important. The next thing is just some eloquence to the way you speak. You know, if some people have heard people scripted on the other end of a phone, you can tell they're reading a script. That's not what I mean, but you could have a little bit of a script for yourself that you don't have to say verbatim, but you can rehearse just like an actor does. Rehearse your pitch. You know, you can have a little bit of a, you know, somebody's going to say, well, how long you've been in business? Have a little script for yourself and just say it to yourself a lot. When you're in the car, record it and let it play back to yourself. When you hear it about 50 times, you're going to know it, you know? So just don't think you know it, really know it. And try to speak in an eloquent way. If you're just trying to put your ideas together on the fly, a lot of times it just doesn't have the finesse or succinct. If you seem confused about your own product, how on earth are you going to convince somebody else to not be confused in your product? So that would be, these are some of the big ones that I'd talk about. The other thing is maybe eye contact. I mean, presentation. Certainly, when you're arriving for public speaking, you want to be dressed for your best. You know, you want to make sure you're coming ready to go. I can't tell you how many times I have had auditions and people show up and they, you know, they don't have any idea. They just say, I'm dressed to get out of bed in the morning, you know, but they're giving up such a powerful thing. And that's to, you know, look your best. And then making eye contact, you know, if you're speaking to somebody, you know, look them in the eye, you know, it looks a strength. If you keep looking away or you're looking down the whole time, it's going to be perceived as either weakness or that maybe you're not telling the truth. Or maybe you're saying something, you're exaggerating something. If you say something with confidence to somebody, they're going to probably take it as truth. So honestly, some of the things I'm mentioning are as important to take in mind that I'm assuming, of course, that you as an entrepreneur need to know that you have a good product. Because some of these techniques, as you could probably imagine, could be used as manipulative ways to get people to buy something that you know is not the best thing for them. So I'm not advocating using these types of skills as a con man would. But these things, you know, need to be used if you're, you know, because it's your job to try to, if you have the best car and you have the best safety seats, and that mom is sitting there with her two kids, it's your job to convince them that this is the best seat. Because if you don't, they're going to go away with a seat that's more dangerous, right? So believe in your product, believe in yourself, and get out there and get the sale.
Those are all very good points, Clyde, and I very much appreciate that. I like that. And they're all well explained. One thing I did want to ask, and you brought this up, you've commented on this a few times, speaking eloquently. Could you give some tips on that, please?
Well, that's trickier. I mean, that's one of those things I mentioned that might require a bit of training. As I mentioned, if you are in shows, you will be practicing saying the line over and over and over again. So that repetition often smooths out some of those difficulties that people have when they're making something up, shooting from the hip. So that's one of it. But another thing is being well read, because reading is a great way to not only increase your vocabulary, but just get very familiar with the flow of the English language. So, you know, you're just getting used to speaking or reading something, you kind of get an intimacy with these words. And it carries over. You don't necessarily have to sit there and train yourself, you know, I'm always going to say this word. No, you don't need to do that. But if you read a lot, especially if you're in some shows, you are naturally going to pick up some of that. It's naturally going to filter into your speech pattern.
So true. I like that. Excellent. Clyde, I believe that a good actor, a successful actor, has to know how to deal with rejection. And that it's the same for someone successful in business. Not everyone is going to buy what you have for sale. Can you give us some tips on dealing with rejection?
The easiest thing is don't care. You know, just don't care. You're going to get rejection. You're going to lose more than you win. But you know, who cares if you don't win that time? That's why you play the game more than once. That's not to say that you don't want to, you know, say to yourself, hey, you know, why didn't I get that sale? You know, maybe I'll look at what did I do wrong? What did I do right? What could I have done better? I don't mean don't care in the fact that you want to analyze what you did, but don't take it to heart because, you know, these things happen. You know, you have to, in time, you know, not only get used to failure, but sometimes even enjoy failure. You know, sometimes I've sat there and, you know, they say no. But, you know, if you're still pleasant with them in the conversation, you know, you might not be able to convert that into a sale. But maybe you can convert it into something else. Maybe you can convert it into a relationship. Maybe they just like you, you know. Maybe they'll like you on Facebook. And then down the road, maybe then they'll say yes. So getting a rejection in the present doesn't mean it's a rejection all for eternity, you know. So, you know, never burn a bridge, but also just don't care that much. You know, at a certain point, you got to be thick-skinned and say, that's all right. I lost this one, but I'll win the next one. And that would be the I think that's the easiest way to say you, how to accept rejection.
Kind of makes me think of that one item is not life or death. It's not going to make it or break it. It's one part or one facet of an eternity. Many, many tries. It's, you know, you just don't fail. If you don't give up, if you fall down once, you get back up. And you're saying, accept that it can happen and that it's a small part of a big thing. Am I looking at that right? The way you're saying it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you're reducing the scale of what it is you're dealing with. I mean, like, there's probably little things that everybody occasionally makes a mistake in their daily life, but they don't take it to heart. I mean, you know, you're waking up in the morning, you put your sock on inside out. You know, you're not going to go, oh, no, I did it again. I'm such a loser. No, you're just going to take your sock off and put it on right. You know, so you don't care about a sock. But by the same way, if you're doing sales calls all the time, you don't have to care about every rejection. It's like, all right, well, that didn't work out, you know, and move on to the next one. You know, you're going to get annoyed occasionally. You're going to get some people that are maybe being a jerk to you for no reason, you know. But that's all in their head. That doesn't have to be in your head. It's a numbers game. The more calls you make, the more leads you get, the more conversions you get, the more money you're going to get. So at the end of the day, it's not about rejection. It's about, you know, a systemized approach. I'm going to call this many times. I'm going to go there this many times. I'm going to send them this many cards. I'm going to, whatever it is you may be doing to acquire your leads, be systematic and don't care. The system will solve it for you, you know?
Well said, well said. I like that. And, you know, for someone who's been in acting all his life, your speech, your talk is that of a marketer and a salesman. It's very interesting. Not that you're not a marketing person and a salesperson, but it's very interesting. And here you are, you've been predominantly, majorly an actor, yet you have the whole understanding of the sales, marketing, methodology, background, and so forth. It's very interesting how similar it is.
Well, remember, a little bit, I'm not just an actor. I also own a theater company. So, you know, I'm also, you know, I do the shows. But, of course, the hardest thing is to get the shows. So, obviously, I spend a lot of my time in the same shoes as probably a lot of people do when they're starting off something new. I spent 95% of my time, you know, selling, knocking on doors, going to restaurants. Hey, would you like to do a dinner theater show? How about a murder mystery show? You know, going to, you know, hotels, going to banking facilities. You know, I spent most of my time selling. And it was beneficial that I had been an actor. It was an advantage. But that's what I'm saying. I lucked out because I just happened to have been an actor and then became an entrepreneur, not an actor. You can always take an acting class. You could probably always take an improv class or be involved in a local show. And it could be a networking situation. You could meet new people. You know, you never know. It's worth it.
I like it. Excellent. And it shows. I got that. You know your stuff. And yes, you are very, very successful. So, and that's because you continue to ply your trade and go out there. You have, in addition to the sales marketing part, because you have the acting part, I think it also seems to make it easier for you because you understand these basic components of getting the person's attention and communicating with the person, which is basically what I think it is all about. But there's a way to do it. And you know how to do that very well because you're such a great actor and you've done so much. Well, good.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
You're welcome. No, I just said thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that. But, you know, it's probably less about being a talented actor as much as it is the repetition of being exposed to a situation where you are forced to say lines in front of an audience all the time. You know, that's really what it is. You don't even have to be a really good actor to get the benefit of that because, you know, after a while, like what happens with anything you do, after a while, you're not going to care if you make a mistake. And not caring is important because fear comes when you really care and you make a mistake. So, yeah, it's kind of like a little mental gymnastic you got to do there. You got to not care, because then if you make a mistake, it's like, eh, it's no biggie.
A little bit of a being detached from it. You still care, of course, but it's not life and death.
It doesn't have to be caring from a ego point of view. It doesn't have to injure your personality. You know, you can make a mistake and it's like, you admit it as a mistake. You admit it as a flaw. Maybe you can improve. I'm not saying you don't look at it intellectually that way, but you don't let it hurt you. It's not necessary to do that. It's not necessary.
Good. Got it. And thanks. All right. Next, Clyde, I pulled 5 inspirational quotes from famous people about success and so forth.
Okay.
I did pull some about acting, but I found after rereading them, I found some of the quotes from actors about acting were somewhat disparaging, condescending. And I thought, no, I'll just stick with success. Because I like to keep things positive. So I'm going to read these out and like to have your comments about them, all right?
Right.
Here we go. James Cameron said, if you set your goals ridiculously high and it's a failure, you will fail above everyone else's success.
Well, I definitely believe there's some truth in that. You know, it's like shoot for the moon and, you know, that at least you'll hit the star kind of concept. I definitely believe that. I definitely believe your overall vision, your overall goal should be really big. And that way you're really stretching yourself out. Yeah, I feel like you should always be going for something that's just out of reach. Otherwise, you won't strengthen yourself. So I definitely would say that's a good way to look at the world.
Good. Yeah. Shoot high goals. Okay, here's the next one. Henry David Thoreau, he was an American author, poet, philosopher, and he passed in 1862. He said, success usually comes to those who are too busy to be looking for it.
Well, you know, that I can see probably where he was coming from with that. I do believe, though, that you need to have your vision clear in front of you. You need to be clear about your goals so that you can achieve them. Now, maybe he was referring more to the concept that you're going to, you know, you're working so hard every day on your habits, on your systems of success, that you're not dwelling on it all day, hoping and dreaming things go well. You're working on your process and your system, which will lead to success. In that way, I can see what he's talking about. But I do think that you should be able to close your eyes and clearly see where you want to be. And if you don't have that, I think you're going to have a hard time making it there because you're going to go in circles a lot.
Yes, I agree with you, and you are so right, and that is correct. Absolutely. You always have to have that goal and vision. And then if you're so busy working on it, you're not focused on, oh, I got to be successful. It'll come.
Right, exactly. Because if you're saying that must mean that you assume that you're not successful now, right? So, you know, like I don't know if you ever watched the Secret movie, you know, from a long time ago. You don't want to focus on the negative, right?
Yeah, exactly. Good. All right, next one. Walt Disney said, all our dreams can come true if we have the courage to pursue them.
Definitely. I mean, you know, like, again, this is pretty basic. I mean, Walt rose from very little to achieve great things. But you're right. I mean, if you have the gumption, if you have the courage to actually get out there and say, I'm going to be the best whatever company in my field and nothing's going to stop me, then I think you're probably going to get there. You know, I think most people are defeated in their mind long before they're defeated in the real world. And you're right. You have to be almost arrogant about, you know, what your goal is. You can't be too humble because you need to be bold. That's the way that you got to go. And that's the reason why I wrote The Greatest Brochure in the World, because that we were saying to ourselves, and by the way, we're working with the Guinness Book of World Records to see if we can get recognized as having the longest brochure in history.
Oh,
but
I
the
like
idea,
that.
But the idea of it is it's a mundane thing, right? Everybody needs a brochure. You hand out brochures. What if your brochure was the next Moby Dick, you know? What if your brochure was the next Lord of the Rings, you know? How cool would that be if it stands alone? But people would be like, wow, who would go there? Who would go that far? Well, that's, I think, what you have to do nowadays in order to get attention. You got to go so big, so far, and people are going to get caught up in your gravity. They're going to get caught up in your orbit, and you're going to pull them in a little bit better with that. And that's why we went that way. It was just a daring move, and you know, it's pretty interesting. If anybody's out there that wants to read it, I would definitely have them take a look at it on Amazon. It's not that much. It's only $12, but it's a great read. It's really cool. Has a lot of metaphysical elements in it as well. So there's my plug.
Oh, no, thank you. I meant to plug that earlier, and I got caught up in the conversation, so thank you. So that's the book is called Riddles Brewed, and the part of the byline is, and the greatest brochure in the world, and you can get that at Amazon, Clyde P. Riddles Brewed. Riddles is like riddles, like in the joke and riddles, and brewed is B-R-O-O-D. Okay. That's very good. We'll like to have another chat with you sometime about your book as well. All right.
Definitely.
The next quote here is from Albert Einstein. He said, try not to become a person of success, but rather try to become a person of value.
Yes. Well, that is a lesson that you can't help people because they really want to be successful. You know, that's the American dream, you know. You start off with rags and you end up with riches. So that's there. But his point, I think, goes to what I mentioned a little earlier where I was saying if you master the idea that you can be a great public speaker, you become more persuasive, stronger in the way you speak. And, you know, you're able to get the people that are listening to you to kind of get into your magnetic field and you really can get them under your sway. That there is a power to that, a magnetism that people can feel, and you can use that the wrong way. You can be getting people to buy something that's not that great, you know, do something that's really a bad deal, you know, and, you know, there's lots of metaphysical reasons why you wouldn't want to be doing that kind of thing, besides legal reasons. But that's where it goes to value, because if you use those things in the pursuit of providing something of great benefit to the person. You know, if you know, hey, if you buy this ad in my ad book, I know this is going to bring customers to you. I know this is going to help you. I know this is going to bring prestige to your organization. You know, that's benevolent. That is good. And it's good to use, you know, your power that way. So, you know, having value is important because it gives you the legitimacy to do this the right way and for the good.
Awesome. Well said. I like it. Very, very spot on. All right. And here's the last quote from Oscar Wilde. He was an Irish writer and he passed in 1900. And he said, I love acting. It is so much more real than life. I love that quote.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I guess maybe what you know, it's hard to say what he meant. Remember, there's some sarcasm in there, but you know, in some ways, acting is like a movie, more real than real, because you know, it's, you know, you're distilling only the most intense things with entertainment, whether it be a show or a movie. I mean, it would be a pretty boring movie to sit there and watch somebody wake up, make their coffee, you know, get dressed. That's real life, but it's not something that people care to watch. So when you're watching a good movie, you're probably seeing the most intense things, the most human, the greatest emotions, whether they be good or bad or angry or happy. You're going to see the most powerful emotions. In that way, I can definitely see. But It's kind of interesting to think, too, that actors, they spend, whether they're in the movies or not, they spend a lot of their time doing simulated experiences, you know? I mean, you know, whereas a normal person, they live their life. Well, when you're an actor, you may have very well been a killer or a king or a pirate or a Civil War nurse or, you know, a cop. You've experienced these different things. Therefore, it's broadened your perspective, you know, and in that way, maybe acting is more real than real life.
Wow. Well said. Poignant. Beautiful. Yeah. One creates. And I think that always stimulates higher levels when a person can create. So very cool. That was fun, Clyde. Thanks for your input.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate the time.
Great. Now we're close to wrapping up. Is there anything else you'd like our audience to know about, please?
Certainly. Well, besides the book, I would say, you know, if anybody is ever in the New Jersey, New York, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania area, you know, take a look at our webpage. It's www.riddlesbrewed.com. You can take a look at there. There's a lot of shows that we have, great for private parties or pretty much any occasion. But maybe sign up for our email list or even like us on Facebook. And you know, you might have a good time just seeing some of the different things. And if you're in this area, maybe come and catch a show.
Sounds wonderful. I would love to. Next time I get out that way, I'm sure I'll look you up. And it was great. And thank you again very much, Clyde. It's wonderful to have you. It's a pleasure. It's an honor. I very much appreciate that you took the time to chat with us and go over all of this with us. It was great.
Certainly. I appreciate it a lot. Thanks, and have a great day.
Thank you. And again, everyone, please go to Amazon, check out the book Riddles Brewed and The Greatest Brochure in the World. And that's Clyde P. Riddles Brewed. All right. Well, thank you again, everyone, and stay tuned to our next show on Revenue Chat. We are going to have part two with author William Morgenstein. He returns with The Crazy Life of a Kid from Brooklyn. He provides us with humorous true life stories and the lessons learned from them about sales, marketing, business, and just staying alive on the next episode of Revenue Chat. This is Tony D'Urso, brought to you by Easy Sales Procedures. Get the book, Easy Sales Procedures, for you and all your business contacts at TonyDURSO.com. All right. Thanks again. And until next time, remember, you can make life better for yourself and everyone. Choose wisely.
Hi, this is Tony D'Urso, author of the new book, Easy Sales Procedures. You know, in my career, I've made impressive record-breaking sales forays into real estate, collectibles, insurance technology, and other varied industries. My accomplishments include raising $3.25 million in a six-month period. Now, despite what we've been told, sales is an art. There are sales procedures that can be applied precisely as a science, but in essence, it's truly an art. There are fundamentals that you need in place that will help you with your sales, marketing, and business. Get Easy Sales Procedures to help put your business into proper perspective. You know, too many people seem to make sales complicated. Hey, it's easy. All you need are some basics and three words: open, agree, and get. That's it. That's EasySalesProcedures.com. This book will endow you with the simple truths at the core of being a sales master, and also contains salesman training drills that, when practiced, demonstrate how to interest any person in anything. These simple procedures can be applied by anyone from any walk of life, because in modern-day society, Every person is involved in interesting or selling someone something. That's Easy Sales Procedures. Get your copies now at a low price from EasySalesProcedures.com. Order enough for all your employees too. Here's to volume sales success for your life and business.